one of the most popular hotels in the Asheville area holds untold secrets from a lady in pink. I'm Felicia, and this is Macabre at Midnight. Welcome back. Leslie is back with us. How have you been?
I've been good. How have you been?
Pretty good.
Well, guess what tomorrow is?
Your birthday?
Yeah.
That's what I was going to do. I was going to wish you a happy birthday. I had it in my head last night before I went to bed, like, wish Leslie happy birthday. And then my mind's just like,
that's fine, because tomorrow's the day I stop aging.
The what?
Tomorrow's the day I stop aging. I turn 29. I will never.
You're not going to get any older.
I'm not going to get any older.
Okay. Well, then I have another year.
Okay.
All right. So, we're going to take a trip to the Grove Park Inn tonight. The air was crisp that November night. Wisps of smoke from the fireplace in the great hall floated up two floors to the palm court. The rooms were warmed by the fireplace's glow and mingled with the nature of the visitors. The hushed murmurs of conversation could barely be heard over the jazzy 1920s music that bounced off the massive stones and pillars of the hall. She could hear all the joviality from the fifth floor of the palm court, which, unlike the great hall, was a desolate place that night. She was young and beautiful. She had graceful features, and her long hair fell around her shoulders that were covered in her pink evening gown. For such a pretty girl, she did look rather melancholy. She stared from the edge of the fifth floor down to the tiled floor far below her. Those tiles seemed so welcoming to her. It was as if they were calling her name. It was a subtle and quiet moment. She was hypnotized by the expanse of the hotel. The danger of what she was doing registered somewhere deep within her mind, but she ignored it. The low wall built to keep people safe was holding her back. It screamed, "Lean back," but its pleading warning fell on deaf ears. The vastness of the room was so inviting. The thin air seemed strong enough to provide her with support. She rested more of her weight on the wall, and her arms reached for the floor below. The air moved, and then the safety of the floor was no longer under her feet. What had she done? Did she shift too far over the wall? Had somebody shoved her? Had she recognized the solution to her depression with the floor below her? She was moving in slow motion. The wind whipped through her hair one last time. Her pink ball gown pressed against her body and flapped in the wind behind her. The spell of the beauty was broken, but it was now too late. The floor was growing larger the closer she came. She would soon meet the hardness of the floor once more. As her reality dawned on her, horror filled her eyes, and she tried to scream, but it was too late. The last things she heard were laughter, murmurs, and the music. The last thing she felt was the chill of the air, and then the hardness of the floor. In the great hall, the musicians never missed a single note, and nobody lost their conversation. The fireplace continued to pop with its warmth, but there was a change. Everybody was aware of it, but they couldn't figure out what it was. Nobody said anything, but they knew. They would soon find out what caused this change in the night's energy. The moon would shine brightly once they walked into the silence of the palm court. There they would see the young girl in her beautiful pink gown, as cold and lifeless as the tiles she laid upon. They would then have their answer. Tragedy. Tragedy is what they had felt. As time passed, that night would soon be forgotten. The girl in her gown would soon become one with the earth, and while everything about the young girl disappeared, something seemed to live on. At first, people weren't quite sure as to what it was, but they would hear stories. "I saw it," somebody said. "I saw it with my own two eyes. I was working late one night in the main inn. It was quiet, and I was alone. Then, suddenly, I had the strangest feeling that was like no other. I had the strangest feeling that I was no longer alone. It felt as if I was being watched when I looked the other way. A chill ran up my back, and the hair on my neck stood on end. It got so cold, and when I looked up, there she stood. It was a lady wearing a long pink dress. She looked sad, maybe even lost. As soon as I saw her, she disappeared. It was as if she had never been there." For generations, these types of stories would continue to pour in. Someone would spot her at a distance, gliding across the hall. Someone came face to face with her as they rounded the corner. Then there are the mischievous goings on. Somebody would buzz the fifth floor, but when the operator reached the floor, he would be met with an empty hall. Vacant rooms would end up getting locked from the inside, and the lights of the hotel would turn on and off without a reason. Chiefs of police, doctors, maids, children, and adults, people from all walks of life have experienced something in the hotel. The hotel administration would forbid the conversation of this topic in order to keep from frightening their guests. But many more people who had heard about this lady in pink would come to the hotel in the hopes of catching a glimpse of her. Some were lucky enough to see her, but most wouldn't see a thing except for the beautiful hotel. Now, the Grove Park Inn need not only be talked about in the context of the Pink Lady. In fact, the hotel is such a site that one could talk about its beginnings and its creator, Edwin Wiley Grove. He was a self-made man who created the Paris Medicine Company in Paris, Tennessee. He made most of his money with Grove's tasteless chill tonic that sold like crazy throughout the South. Tasteless, in this case, was a good thing. It was a malarial preventative, and it was promoted by saying that it would disguise the unpleasant taste of quinine. On his doctor's advice, Grove moved to Asheville, seeing how healthy the tourist business was in town and not being one to pass up an opportunity to make money. He started working with his son-in-law, Thomas Seeley, to create the Grove Park Inn. Since it opened in 1913, it has remained in continuous operation. The inn has seen the likes of George Gershwin, Harry Houdini, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and even President Obama. Known for its comfort and elegance, the Grove Park hosts several world-class restaurants and a superior spa. With its beauty, it is easy to understand why nobody would want to leave. The Pink Lady has been present in the inn for more than 90 years, but she has always been cloaked with mystery. Nobody really knows who she was. The only thing we know for certain is that sometime in the early 1920s, a young woman dressed in a pink gown, staying with a registered guest in room 545, allegedly fell to her death from the balcony. There were rumors that surrounded who the young lady was and how exactly she died. And for the most part, she is a benevolent spirit. She seems to be the most active when there aren't as many people around. One woman who worked in the catering and convention services experienced something strange in 1981. During that time, the hotel would close during the winter, and she was there working one night on the cash registers and working through some preparatory errands. She was the only person there besides a sole security guard somewhere outside. Around 11 that night, she left the inn, and because the door was set to lock behind her, she couldn't re-enter. She went to her car, but she couldn't leave because of the chain across the driveway. When she looked up, she saw that all of the lights on the sixth floor of the main inn were on. She assumed that the security guard was on that floor. She pulled up to the hotel and honked her horn, hoping to get the guard's attention. A few moments later, the guard came walking up through the parking lot. Puzzled by the fact that he didn't come from inside, she wondered why the lights had been on. She and the guard went back inside together to investigate and went to the sixth floor. When they got there, they saw that all of the lights were off. At a loss, the guard took her back to the car, and once again, they looked up to see a dark hotel. While it's understandable for people to have mixed feelings about witnessing the Pink Lady, she has always been a benevolent spirit, and at most, may be a bit on the mischievous side.
I was reading up on her for today's episode, and I heard that she mainly appears to children, and in the wintertime.
Yeah. A lot of people say that, especially if a child, like, got sick while at their stay, that it seemed like she would just watch over them or something.
And I was going to say that I remember we went there 1 year. I don't remember how old I was, but I was small enough that my mom still wanted to hold my hand when we went to see the gingerbread houses. And I had to use the restroom. So mom was like, okay, take my hand. We'll go find a restroom. And we're coming back. And it was like just me and my mom. And I felt something really cold behind me. I turned around and there was like a pink mist. So I thought like that was like really cool.
Yeah.
After I was researching that she showed up to kids at wintertime. And I was like, okay, I was a kid and it was wintertime.
Chances are she shows up at wintertime because that's probably during the time of year that she died.
Yeah, I was thinking that might be why she's around more then.
She also seems to like Elaine's dueling piano bar.
Interesting.
One of the managers of Elaine's dueling piano bar was well acquainted with the peacefulness associated with the Pink Lady. She said that she had encountered a form of the Pink Lady on several occasions. She described it as a real dense smoke. She said that it just flowed, and it was a pinkish pastel in color. She said that on one occasion, when Elaine's was full, she was walking towards the landing of the steps and had to quickly dodge out of the way to make sure she didn't walk into the spirit. These types of stories show the sociable side of the Pink Lady. While many people have stated that the Pink Lady appeared as an abstract form, like a smoke, others have seen her in a nearly tangible, distinct form. This particular appearance took place on New Year's Eve in 1989. Two inn workers were at a party at the hotel's accounting office. It was around 3 or 4 in the morning, and they were the last ones there after the party had wound down. They heard something coming in the back door. When they looked up, something ran past them really fast. They knew it was a woman, and she was dressed in party clothes. They figured she was just a guest, so they got up. She was gone. They called security, but they couldn't find anything. One of the former photographers at the hotel, who worked there from 1991 to 1995, said that she encountered the distinct form of the Pink Lady many times when working in her photo lab. She said that the Pink Lady used to play tricks on her. She would move things around or touch her. She even saw her a few times. She also stated that the Pink Lady liked to scare her photographers. This particular worker, while her photographers were afraid of the Pink Lady, she never was. She felt she was a bit of a prankster and just wanted people to know that she was there. Once the Pink Lady realized she couldn't get a rise out of her, her appearances happened less often. As far as guests go, children seem to be the ones who have spotted her the most often. The hotel received a letter from a doctor who lived in Tampa, Florida. He stated that in December 1992, he and his family had stayed in the hotel in rooms 443 and 445. One afternoon, the doctor and his wife were out. Their 2-year-old son was napping in room 443 while the babysitter was in 445. The sitter heard the child murmur for around an hour and a half before he fell asleep. When the sitter went in to check on the child, he asked, "Where did the nice lady go?" She was quite puzzled by this and asked him what lady, and he replied with, "The nice lady I've been talking to." The sitter tucked him back into bed, and he murmured for a few minutes more and then went back to sleep. Once the doctor and his wife came back, their son told them about the nice lady. The incident would repeat on the following night. On both days, the doctor knew he had chained and locked their door.
Well, that's creepy.
Yeah, I thought so too.
I think if that happened with my little girl, I would flip out. Like, at first. And then I'd be like, okay, it's a ghost. It's sweet. She's fine. But I'm still calling her priest.
Yeah, I just wonder, because when I was reading it, it didn't really specify why the doctor sent the note. If he was just informing the inn that this happened, or if he was, like, angry with the inn. Like, I don't know what the feel of the note was. I kind of want to know that.
Yeah, me too, actually, yeah.
It's like, was he saying, like, my son had this strange lady come in a room? Or is like, I just want to let you know, there was somebody visiting my son.
Yeah. Like, I need more context here.
Yeah. While there are numerous stories about sightings of the Pink Lady, there have also been reports of odd occurrences that don't have any conventional explanation. Security, on many occasions, have gotten a call to the main inn to unlock the bathroom doors. Keep in mind that the bathroom doors bolt from the inside. They don't have a key that opens them. The only way they could be locked was from the inside. While nobody knows for certain about the identification of the young woman, which seems to be a common problem in Asheville, there are a lot of theories about who she could have been. Some say she was visiting the inn for a clandestine evening with her married lover when he called off the affair. She threw herself off the balcony in her anguish. Some say that she was a servant girl from a local home who had an affair with a man of the house when she became pregnant. When he found out, he pushed her off the balcony to make sure their secret was never revealed. Others say she was a young debutante who accidentally slipped and fell. There is a nicer theory of her identity. Some historians say that the ghost could be that of Zelda Fitzgerald. She was being treated for a nervous breakdown at the nearby Highland Hospital. Her husband, author F. Scott Fitzgerald, would stay in rooms 441 and 443 at the Grove Park Inn when he was in town visiting his wife. Some say that when Zelda died in the hospital fire in 1948, that she attached herself to the inn because it reminded her of happier times. What I find interesting is the boy who told his parents and babysitter about a nice lady was napping in room 443.
I did not know that theory, and I think I like that theory best out of all of them, because you all know that The Great Gatsby is one of my favorite books.
Yeah, I like
and
that.
And movies, actually. The old version, not the new version, although Leonardo DiCaprio is the best part of that entire travesty of the movie.
Yeah, I liked that theory, too. It was the first I'd read of it. But it's nicer than thinking of somebody getting murdered or just accidentally falling or something.
Or committing suicide.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that theory. We're going to do it.
We're deciding it now. The pink lady is Zelda Fitzgerald.
Yes.
While ghosts may seem like a scary concept, I don't think anybody has anything to fear from the pink lady. She has made the Grove Park Inn her home for close to 100 years, and she doesn't seem to be going anywhere.
It's like, maybe that's why I like The Great Gatsby. It's one of my favorite books. It's like, maybe it was Zelda and liked that she like impressed on me that you will like this book.
It's possible. I'm interested because I've not read a lot about the Highland Hospital fire, but I'm planning on doing an episode on that. Mainly because I want to learn more about Zelda Fitzgerald and what her nervous breakdown entailed, because I'm sure that's going to be what nowadays we just call a little bit of anxiety, but back then they were just crazy.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, I'm sure, like, I would have been committed like a long time ago back in those days.
Oh yeah.
Like, I wonder like how different mental health would be now if they would have diagnosed it back then, instead of it being like breakdowns.
Yeah. Or like female hysteria.
Yeah. Because is this now starting to like not be classified as something bad, I feel like? Is this now actually being accepted as a serious problem?
Yeah.
That people struggle with on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, but who knows if they knew more about mental health back then and had treated it properly, we might not have some of the books or stories or things that we have now.
That's very true too, though.
It's funny reading about these, and most of these stories I've done that's local with Asheville, I've read about before to a certain extent, but I find it so interesting how so many of them is like, we don't really know who she was or who they were, or there's just so many loose ends. Like with the pink, like, I'm like, do you not report anything? I know if it was like a suicide, most suicides even now don't get reported. They don't find it important. Yeah. But you would think there'd at least be a newspaper article that popped up, like, young lady falls to death. Yeah. Because that was my problem when I did Helen's Bridge. There is no information that anything ever happened at that bridge for somebody to die. And I know I didn't mention it in the episode because it just popped in my head. But everybody's like, Helen hung herself. But I remember the guy we talked to at Festiva was like, if you look at the bridge, there's no way that a rope could have hung off of it. And I'm like, but she could have just jumped from the bridge.
Right.
I hadn't really thought about it until now, but I'm like, she could have just jumped from it, but you can't find anything on that. There's nothing. I didn't see any. Of course, I didn't go look at the microfiche of the time, but then you don't have a date for it either. So you'd just be sitting there looking through the 1920s through the 40s of Grove Park Inn to see if there's any news article about a young woman falling and dying.
Right. Didn't they make it where you can't access Helen's Bridge now? And you can't access the castle where she lived at? where the fire was, where her son died?
Well, see, that's the problem. There's the Zealandia Castle, which is being used by Festiva Resort. Well, it used to be Festiva Resorts. They've actually now changed the name to Zealandia something company. So you can still go to the castle that Sir Brown, I forgot his first name, I think it's Henry, built many...
Probably Henry. There's a lot of Henrys there.
Many moons ago. So you can still get there because we went inside and saw some of it when we did our documentary in high school. Helen, there some theories say she lived in the house and some say she lived across from the house on the other side of the bridge and that her daughter was just visiting when the house caught fire. You can still technically get to Helen's Bridge unless they've put up something new since then. It has been over 10 years since we did that documentary.
Oh, has it really been over 10 years?
Well, next year it'll be 10 years since we graduated.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I have those moments often. But
What was it? I was talking to somebody about something, and they said, oh, is that so-and-so in this movie? Or something like that. I was like, oh, dear God, I totally know. Oh, it was like they have it. I was reading a book, and it was these, like, rodents that were, like, really, really big. I was like, oh, well, like, the Rouse from Princess Bride. She's like, I've never seen the Princess Bride. I've never, like, really even know what a Rouse is. I was like, I'm going away now.
But, yeah, with Helen's Bridge, there, when we did that, there's just a, oh, Lord, what are they called? They go on the side of the road, guardrail, that you have to step over, and there is a sign telling you not to go on the bridge, but you technically can still get on it. It's a little bit overgrown, but I mean, they kept the area mowed down to where you could step across the guardrail and not be like up to your eyeballs and weeds and stuff. So in my head, I'm like, you're making it perfect for people just to check out the bridge. Like, leave it overgrown if you don't want people over there.
See, like, that reminded me, like, I'm sure you probably talked about in your podcast, that was the one that I didn't get to yet. Wasn't there, like, you could go up there and turn your engine off and say, like, Helen, come forth, Helen, come forth, Helen, come forth, and she'll, like, come forth, and, like, you could see handprints on the hood of your car.
Yep. Yeah, there's one guy, and I swear, I don't remember where I read half these stories, because when I think I remember where I read them, and I go back, it's not there. But there was somebody I'd read... I'd read about a man who had went up to Helen's Bridge, and I don't even think he had called for Helen, and I love how we're getting off on Helen's Bridge, but I don't care. I don't know, I can't remember if he called for her or not, or if his car just stalled, and then this woman comes up and puts her hands on his car and everything, and he finally gets his car started back, and he goes home, and parks his car in the garage, and the next morning he comes out, and there's these two white handprints on his car, and it doesn't matter how much he repaints it or whatever, those two handprints just continue to come back. Like I said, I don't remember where I read it. I could have dreamt the story. I'm pretty sure I didn't. I'm pretty sure I read it in a book somewhere.
Like, that's, like, sounds really familiar. Like, I feel like maybe you had told me about that, like, or maybe you mentioned that in your documentary that you guys did. But that sounds really familiar.
I don't think...
Did you? Like, I know, like, I remember, like, you telling me something about that.
Yeah. I still have a copy. I still have a copy of the documentary somewhere. it used to be on YouTube, but it's not anymore. But, yeah. There's a book that my mom got me in high school that is... Asheville Myth and Legends, and I've used that a lot with the episodes and everything as a resource point. But the weird thing is I have had to buy myself a new copy of it because I kept losing the original copy, and I still don't know where my original copy is, because I read through the whole book and everything fairly quickly, because I mean, it's a small book, and then when we did the documentary in high school, we used that for it to help us out with that and everything. And I'd keep it in my backpack. And then after we got rid of the documentary, or got done with the documentary, The book just seemingly disappeared. I was sure it was in my backpack, and I couldn't find it. And then a few years later, I found it again. And then when I was in college, there was we were talking about it. I was talking about it with some people at Mars Hill, and one of the girls asked if she could borrow the book, and so I let her. And I am 100% positive she gave me the book back, and I put it back in my backpack. But from that point, I have no clue where it's at. And I cleaned out my backpack after I graduated college and everything, and I threw stuff away and put stuff up, but I could not tell you where that book went. So I just had to buy a new copy.
I can't tell you how many times I've done that. But we were cleaning out a bookshelf the other day, and I found my copy of Haunted Asheville.
I don't have... Wait. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I have Haunted Asheville. That's the one from the Warren dude.
Yeah, and it has, like, the pink lady on the front.
Yeah. Yeah, I have that.
And it has, like, the haunting of the old News 13 station or whatever in it, that story.
Yep. Going back around to the pink lady. So you only had the experience that one time when you were a kid?
Yeah. I've only been there the one time.
I've never even been there.
Like, it had to be, like, I was in the single digits.
Single digits. Yeah, I think my mom or dad, one, might have delivered there when they worked for Airborne. And I didn't even think to ask them if they ever experienced anything any time they were there.
Oh, if I thought about it, I had friends who actually worked as turndown service there. Like, they would go and make up their beds and clean the rooms and all that stuff.
But yeah, I think if people wanted to learn more about it, read more about it, I think finding the copy of Haunted Asheville would be good, because Warren and his lemur crew did an actual investigation of it, and they talk about what they found in there. She's kind of connected to room 545, I believe, is what I said. When they were doing their investigation, they had they noticed a light over the door or something, and they wanted to get into it, so they went to a maid and got her key card, which I think is funny because the book is back from the late 90s, and he felt it necessary to explain that the rooms use a plastic card and an electromagnetic strip to open the doors. I'm like, nowadays it would be weird to be handed a normal, regular key to unlock a hotel door, and he's explaining the concept of a key card. But they tried to unlock it with the maid's key card, and it would not unlock. They tried it several times, and then they went to the front desk to get the regular key card that, like, a guest would be given, and that still didn't unlock it. So then they had to call security. I'm not exactly sure how security unlocked the door. I know when they unlocked the bathroom doors, they said they had to take it off the hinges. I guess nobody wanted to crawl under.
Well, I don't blame them. I don't care how many times you clean a bathroom floor. There's no amount of cleaning that can sanitize that thing properly.
Yeah, no.
That's just me being a little bit of a germaphobe, though.
I know. I don't think it's because you're germaphobe or anything. I think most people would be like, yeah, the bathroom's floor is nasty. Because I know... Every time I use a public bathroom, I'm going, please let the door unlock when I leave. I don't know why I'm worried about that, because those locks can't really get stuck. Although, I say that, I'll get stuck the next time I use a public bathroom. And I'm just looking at the floor like, I don't want to have to crawl under.
Just that reminds me, did you go on the Washington trip in middle school?
Do what?
The Washington trip.
Oh, no. Did you go? I didn't go.
Okay. I went. I was dating a guy at the time, and he decided to break up with me while we were on the trip on the ferry boat. So I went to the bathroom to, you know, naturally cry. I got stuck in the bathroom. The door had not unlocked. So here I am, crying. Then I'm stuck in the bathroom, freaking the F out. So luckily I had my phone. I called my friend. I was like, I'm crying and I'm stuck in the bathroom. Come help me. Yeah, she was not happy with him. She made him feel really bad.
I don't know why, but I vaguely remember you telling me that story before. Because it sounds familiar. I'm sure it was a long time ago. But it...
I probably told you when I got back, or I called you that night in the hotel room and something. I don't know.
I don't know that you would have called me. I don't know that we were that close at that point. We didn't really get close until high school. But you might have told me when Jens came back. That's it for tonight's episode. As always, check us out on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And we also have a Patreon, so make sure to check that out too. Bye!